for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 251 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm fresh back from the New York Comic Con, and I have the con crud to prove it. But that won't stop this from being a great doubleheader episode, with two writers returning to share their latest projects with us. First up is Tyler Chin Tanner, who's got a great anthology called Loved and Lost that he's got a Kickstarter going for. Of course, you go to Kickstarter and looked up Loved and Lost Anthology. You'll find it there. He has 9 different stories in the volume and some great interesting takes on love and love affairs. Then I talk with Michael Jan Friedman, well-known author of comics and books and many other good things, who has a new comic coming out that he wants you to know about. And we're looking for that to come in December, but this is your chance to get ahead of the curve and listen to what he's got to say, as well as what he thinks of other Star Trek things going on and other projects he has coming. There's a lot to get to, as always. So let's get on with the show.
Hi, I'm Tyler Chin Tanner, publisher at A Wave of the World, back on Kickstarter for my new project, Loved and Lost. I had such a positive experience with my last campaign for the Broken Frontier anthology, I couldn't wait to do it again. Loved and Lost is a collection of 9 stories about imperfect romances, those relationships in life that don't always work out the way we expected. It's less about tragic heartache than it is about the pitfalls we run into, our fears, our fantasies, the cultural divides that keep us from finding real love. I've written all of the stories myself and worked with a different artist and art team for each one. They've really brought my scripts to life in unique and interesting ways. If you haven't already heard of these artists, I recommend you check them out. And what better way than with Loved and Lost? We hope you'll support our campaign. I promise, you'll be happy you did.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Tyler Chin Tanner, who has a wonderful Kickstarter going on for a series or an anthology called Loved and Lost. How are you doing today, Tyler?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's always good to talk with you. You make some interesting stuff. And last time I talked with you, I talked about that great little story that you told about a lady in Africa that I really loved. I thought that was such a great one.
From my first series, Adrenaline.
Yeah, I really loved that one. That was a great one.
That was the first one I did right out of art school, out of the Kubert School.
That's cool. Well, I want to talk a little bit about that before we get into the anthology, because you're an artist, as I remember correctly.
I got into it late in the game. I wasn't much of an artist until I decided to make the jump into the Kubert School. Mm. And that was mostly just to learn about the craft and about making comics. I do like to draw a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I draw recreationally. I post some things every once in a while. I do like to help out with layouts or backgrounds with some artists sometimes when they don't mind me jumping in there. But it might be something I explore later, getting back to art and drawing some stories, especially if I just do some short stories. But I'm not a full-time artist.
Now, it says on here it's got Wendy's name on it, your wife. Did she contribute to some of this stuff? How did this happen?
Yeah, she was the editor, pretty much just, taste barometer, making sure I keep things that would appeal to, I don't know, more people outside of my own, mm-hmm. what I think is amusing. Mm-hmm. She reads over pretty much everything I write, whether it's a script for a story mm-hmm. or a press release or just something I put on the website, and then it always goes through her, so...
And I always think it's good to have somebody read it who is not a part of the story towards the end. I always like to tell the crazy story about I was working at a hospital, and this older lady was a proofreader. She was a little loud because she couldn't hear, so she kept talking too loudly to people in the lobby. So they sent her to us because she was good at proofreading. And one day she came running in laughing hysterically at me. She says, "Oh, I like this. These people are gunslingers," she goes. I said, "What?" She says, "You call them a dual-income family, D-U-E-L. And I went, "Okay, well, I'm glad you found that rather than sending it out that way, because sometimes after you read something for so long, you just can't remember."
When I read over my scripts, I know it so well. I just read it in my head, so it almost doesn't even matter what's on the page, because I'm just reading that line, like, automatically.
Mm-hmm. Now, you got, when this posts, they'll have a few days left to get the folks going. And you've got in the 70s as far as backers go when we're talking. So you've got a good number of folks. What we need to do, of course, is move along a little faster so you can get the money for the next project for this Loved and Lost anthology.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is just a 2-week campaign. So this is day 3 of the campaign.
Oh,
gotcha. Yeah, I didn't drag it out too much. I do hope, you know, I'm hoping the consequence of that isn't that people see it and think that I'm more than halfway through and have only gained, what are we at, like 37%.
Right.
Which isn't a bad percentage. But
no,
I don't know how people sort of judge things based off of how quickly they're going. So we're doing all right, you know, not gangbusters, but, you know, for 3 days, 37%. You can keep up, you know, through next week. We'll be in good shape.
Sounds good, because your stuff always is our great stories, are things that can pull you in and make us kind of figure out who these people are and care about them, and then things happen to them. And I always like that kind of stuff. I really enjoy caring about characters, and not every story does that.
Yeah.
It's so tough when I read a book and I don't care about them. It's like a video game at that point.
Right. That's a big thing for me, too. I'm always trying to write stories about characters, about character development, about interactions. And that's something I look for in artists too, because, you know, it's about the artists in this medium. And if they can draw these characters and draw those interactions, you know, not just a pretty picture, but, you know, real storytelling and real, you know, acting with the characters, that's important.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's called Loved and Lost Anthology, and you've got 9 stories from what I understand. There's a sentence or a couple sentences underneath the video. Sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you get burned. 9 stories about imperfect romance.
Yeah, I didn't quite know how to describe it. I didn't want to do, like, the perfect love. I mean, people, even when they write about true love, they often throw, like, a conflict in, like, that they have to get over first before it's like true love. But I don't know. I wanted to tell some stories that weren't necessarily like, this is the perfect match, you know, because you go through a lot of them. There's a lot of trial. I mean, you know, I can't say for everybody's experience or when they meet the one, but you know, that's a big part of life, I think, is learning about relationships through, you know, these romances and interactions with people that aren't necessarily going to be your true love. And, I think you learn a lot from them. And I don't know, maybe I was just at a point in my life where I was reflecting back, you know, after being happily married for 12 years, you know, I was just like, I don't know. I just like, I didn't want to write just perfect, true, you know, love stuff. Like, let's write about the nitty gritty and get into some things.
Because the perfect romances are really rare, as far as I understand. A lot of people really come to like to care about each other, but it's not necessarily the, you know, Cinderella story or the other kinds of things like that.
So yeah, a lot of that is just fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, so I wanted to kind of do away with that, the whole fantasy romance type thing.
I think I read a couple of them, if I remember correctly. You sent them to me, and I really liked your shorter stories, because what happens is you cannot really pull anything out of it without revealing something that's going to happen. So I don't want to talk too much about it. You could probably give a couple of, you know, basic setups for what some of them are. Maybe you could say, like, which one was your favorite one? Because, you know, when you write 9 stories, you know, it's like picking your children, of course, which one's your favorite.
Yeah.
But there was
that. Well, it's funny. I had a bunch of different readers, you know, including my wife, you know, and people have their different ones. And I have a real strong attachment to freshly planted seeds. Mm-hmm. As my wife put it, it's the most sort of like troubled story. Like it's more involved. It's the most sort of involved. Like, am I really trying to say something here? I really didn't try to overdo it. You know, I tried to keep it, you know, about certain elements and just, you know, keep it light. Like, you know, there's the topic, there's what they deal with, but I don't know. I mean, I know maybe it's just one of those things the author loves more than, I don't know if it'll be, you know, everybody else's favorite story, but, you know, it has sort of a special place in my heart. You know, it deals with volunteers that go down to a farming village in Peru and are there to help. And the guy, Nathan, is there on sort of like a religious mission. Like, this is what I do, you know, to be, you know, good Christian. And Jill is more coming from the academic, you know, she was an environmental science major and she's looking for something to put on her resume. So they have their motivations to go down there. And it's just a real learning experience for both of them in terms of, you know, look, this is just about me, not about them. And I have more to learn, you know, which something, you know, I sort of went through. I did some teaching abroad, and I didn't go in thinking I was necessarily going to be the savior or anything, but you really realize you're has this very minor effect on these people's world, and they've been surviving and living in these conditions, you know, for generations. And yeah, if you want to come and be part for a little while, see what that's about, you know, you'll grow, you'll learn from that, mm-hmm. you know, you'll mature, and that's worth doing. But, you know, it's really about that more than just how much you're helping them or influencing their conditions.
Well, it seems to me like what you're doing here, when you're doing something like that, it's also like these kind of stories. People learn from these experiences. You know, when you're done there, you're teaching them something that they can take forward in their lives. And in these stories, they probably are going to be a little wiser, maybe some sadder, but it'll be something that they can use as they go forward.
Yeah, I hope it reflects back on them. You know, I never try to be too preachy. I try to just find something, some little nugget of humanity or life, and just sort of, I don't know, translate it, you know, put it out on page. And I hope it, when the readers read it, it's more about what they take away from it or how they relate to it than exactly what exactly I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, called the Loved and Lost. Does that mean that every story ends with loss?
You know, I tried to... lost in some way, or lost as in geographically, mm-hmm. finding your way. I was hoping that sort of pun would be clear, mm-hmm. that it's the lost is meant to mean you lose the love, but also lost is sort of terms of where you are in the world or where you are and figuring things out. None of them end in sort of the storybook way, I'll put it that way, mm-hmm. but some of them are a little ambiguous. You know, as far as just how long, like, it doesn't necessarily end, like, that's it, we're breaking up type, like, thing. Mm-hmm. But because of what they've gone through, you don't necessarily know, like, okay, is this, you know, is this going to go on forever? Or is it just going to, like, are they going to work through this a little bit longer and then just, you know, you don't know. But I wanted to just deal with a problem in a relationship or a change in expectations where people have to go, huh, okay, this is the new situation. And then there are ones that are flat out like, okay, this isn't going to work. Let's move on. Type like thing. So, you know, there's variety. I tried to hit different kinds of people, different situations, different locations, and just try to hit universal elements, but with a lot of variety to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, are they mostly men and women stories? Is that what these are basically?
Yeah. So they're all heterosexual stories. Mm-hmm. There is a gay character, a side character in one of them. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this is all me, right? Like, I wrote the 9 stories, and I mean, it's based off of my own experience. I can only write from that perspective. I didn't really want to pretend to know that I could write about a gay relationship or anything transsexual. I just don't have the experience for that. It's just not my, mm-hmm. So, I mean, those will be the projects I'll back on Kickstarter, mm-hmm. you know, when someone else is doing that, mm-hmm. and totally, we need more of that in the industry, but it wasn't something I wanted to tackle. This project anyway.
But you said something that kind of caught my attention about the fact that these are kind of stories about that you've gone through.
Yeah. I mean, I base that off of what I know. They're not super autobiographical. Mm-hmm. You know, like what I was saying with Freshly Planted Seeds, mm-hmm. that deals with volunteering abroad. So I've had experience with that, but I wasn't writing, you know, I didn't go down on a religious mission. So if anything, I'm more like chill in that situation. Mm-hmm. Cachet 22 kind of deals with art and business, which based off of me. Thaw at the end is probably the most that's based off of my true life experience. But again, I'm not actually in it. It's about 3 guys, because those are 3 guys that were in the military, and I actually hung out with some friends that were in the military together, and then we're, you know, in San Diego, and it's still a completely fictional story, but I sort of based it around them, mm-hmm. And just what I saw going on there. Yeah.
I'm curious, though, because in these days, you know, social media plays such a part in all these things. How much mm-hmm. does social media play a part in your stories? Are there occasional ones?
Well, the first story is called Status Update, mm-hmm. and that's about 2 people who meet online mm-hmm. and have a lot in common when they're in chat rooms or discussing, you know, whatever the hot topic of social media of the day is, you know, how like certain things go through and, you know, they're very opinionated and have the, you know, the same feelings. But when they get face to face, it's almost like they don't know how to have a conversation without popping out their phone and looking at whatever's going on in social media and commenting. And so they just end up commenting back and forth to each other about what they're reading on their phone.
It's funny because you go to restaurants and you'll see people sitting with their phones. They're not talking to each other. And none of that stuff's going on. What they're doing is they're messaging. And, of course, it may or may not be the other person at the table.
Right.
I always get a little concerned about that because, you know, we always said that that social media doesn't help people communicate unless we're constantly on it, it seems like to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, especially since we've gotten, you know, the smartphones and stuff. It's hard not to, like, if you're out at dinner, or we have two kids too, hard not to, like, just look to see if somebody, you know, emailed you something that you should respond to, or, like, should I really just make a point to ignore my phone until till we're done or something like that, you know? So it's, that's interesting.
I remember the guy that sold me my very first iPhone. He said to me, "This is going to change your life." And I laughed at him. I laughed out loud. And now I wish I could find that guy again and say, "You know what? You were right.
It changed society, man. It changed us all."
Because I can't go anywhere without people finding me.
Yep.
Now, it used to be I could go someplace and if there wasn't a phone around or something, you couldn't reach me. And so that was all kind of fun, be able to get away from things. But not anymore. Not anymore.
You have to have a pretty good excuse for why you didn't pick up or respond to somebody on time, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what other circumstances are in the stories that you did?
I've got one at a basketball game, which was fun to do. They meet up. Let's see. There's a scuba diving one. Two people meet underwater. Cache 22, I mentioned, which was, you know, a techie and an artist in San Francisco, start dating. There's one that just purely takes place in a bar. Guy walks in, talks to a couple ladies, arranges, you know, tries to play a little two-person game, but, you know, kind of falls flat on his face. There's a politician and a sex scandal one, which was a lot of fun to do. That was almost like catharsis, like, oh, I don't have to think too hard about this one. let's just put some debauchery and some fun into this one and, you know, see how it lands. And then there's one about, you know, an older couple on a picnic at the end. It was kind of called Swan Song, which was nice to do. And I mentioned the San Diego one with the ex-Marines in San Diego. So,
how many pages in this book?
Story total, I think the exact story totals are just over 130.
Okay.
So I'm calling the book like a 150-page book because, you know, with between breaks, pages, and the bonus material and the pinups at the end, it's, I think it'd be like 150.
I just bet, though, that you've done this anthology now. You have come across other stories that you wish you had included or you'd like to include in a future one of these.
Mostly I've found other artists. Like, oh, I wish I had another story to get this artist on something or things like that. I don't know. I think I'm ready to move on, actually, with the story.
Oh, really?
I'm thinking about too many more because I couldn't think, like, oh, if I put another one in. I'm working on two other projects now because I finished writing these a while ago. So my head's kind of in those worlds, which is different than this Love and Loss type theme. So, I'm just excited to get this book out, you know, show it to people, have it be like a finished product. And, I've got some other things, you know.
Is it going to go into local stores? Is it going to be on, like, in Comixology? How are you going to get it out to the folks?
It's definitely going to be on Comixology. I was kind of going to gauge the Kickstarter campaign to see what I wanted to do as far as the print run or where to run it. You know, I don't know. I think I might try to solicit in Diamond. That's such a tricky game. Because, you know, just being like a small label, you don't get a lot of orders. And without getting some sort of hype or headline, which I'm not very good at that. I don't necessarily even write things based off of a headline. I do it more like story, like just an interesting, well-told story, you know, done in high quality type thing. So I tend to just be like, hey, it's on Comixology. It's on my website. Go to conventions, you know, talk to stores directly if they want to carry it and just be satisfied with that.
Because these days, you know, you can get comics in any way. And a lot of people have been saying that Kickstarter is like the second biggest producer of comics after Marvel. I've been reading some of that. And so I'm kind of fascinated because I know some people who only buy stuff through Kickstarter. They do not buy things.
And that's your bread and butter on Kickstarter, man. Mm-hmm. Like, these people are great. Like, yeah, you look at all these backers and it's like, you know, 137 projects back, because you can see that information. And just, you know, these are the people. They just love Kickstarter. And I've backed over 100 myself. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great way to support independent. And I say support because it's something I want, not just because I'm trying to help them out. Mm-hmm. And I like the process. I like being in a project, not necessarily from the beginning, because who knows when I'll get that done, but seeing it at least, you know, as the art's being finished and the production, and follow along, you know. And if somebody runs a good campaign and is ready to like really put this out, it's sort of a joy to be involved in. Like, I just really like it myself. So, yeah, I'm a full supporter on both sides. You know, I don't know how many more campaigns I'll do myself, but I like it. If somebody's doing a good campaign, you know, I like to get behind it.
That's great. It was so funny. A long time ago, I had a friend of mine, and what it has to do with this, I don't know, but he was a Buddhist, and he loved Josh Whedon. And mm-hmm. what he wanted to do was he wanted to say that people would get online and they would support his stuff. They would put money into it, and if we've got enough money, he could do it. And yeah. I remember all of us laughing at him, saying, "That'll never happen. I can't do that." And now look at Kickstarter. Kickstarter's doing that very thing. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, you have to laugh at people's ideas. Because, yeah. you know, the guy who came up with, like, FedEx, he had this big thing about doing that, and he got a failing grade in some business school. And then he got out of there, and he built it up, and now FedEx is one of the biggest things. So, okay, you were mentioning, well, first thing before I get to that, you were saying that it's going to be done on, looks like it's October 25th at 11 p.m., is when the Kickstarter is going to be done. If you want to find it, go Loved. It looks like Ampersand Lost Anthology on there, or your name, Tyler Chin hyphen Tanner.
Yeah.
And it'll help people get to
it. It's pretty easy. Or you can just go into comics and anthologies. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only like 11 anthologies up right now. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you were saying you have other projects in the works. Can you talk a little bit about them? Or is this one of those kind of top secret things that you can't talk about?
I try not to get too much into it, but yeah, I can talk about one. I've got a fantasy type thing that's set more in like the Mayan Aztec, you know, Mesoamerican world. Mm-hmm. So, but it's really like full on adventure, kind of what you'd get in like Game of Thrones, but completely different setting. Rather do the Roman, you know, Saxon type inspiration, you know, King Arthur or anything like that. I just really wanted to just set something like that that was very, you know, calendar based, you know, with the approaching doomsday prophecy and that sort of world, just as far as the visuals and their traditions. And I've been doing a lot of research on that kind of world. And it's a fictional world, but that's, you know, based more off of that aesthetic. Mm-hmm. So I have that coming up. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's probably the only one I want to talk about now, because I've still got to see some directions as far as the other one and just what exactly we'll do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that first one, I hope to have something out, you know, next year once I get this Loved and Lost wrapped into the printers. You know, it's full steam ahead on that sort of big, sprawling adventure book.
That'd be good. It sounds to me one of the things you enjoy doing is telling different kinds of stories.
Yeah.
And not everybody does that. There are some people who are just total sci-fi people. They want to write sci-fi.
Yeah.
Or there's people who want to write adventure, you know, in jungle type stuff. And to me, I think the best writers are those who can do like you do, who can do different kinds of stories and tell them all.
Yeah.
Which I like.
Yeah. That's definitely my approach. I just want to do something. I want to tell a contained story, and that sort of scratches that itch. And I do some research and get my mind around that sort of topic, and then move on and want to look into something else.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Now, as far as we were saying, it's going to stop at on the 25th, Tuesday at 11 p.m. So do not waste. This is your chance to get out there and support this great project, because we've all been in relationships. We've all had them go sour on us or work out or just the other thing. And we need to be able to relate to other people who have gone through these kinds of stories. And, you know, there's so many times I run into people who have had relationships that are either terrific or really terrible, and the way to talk with them about this, this gives you some kind of basis. You can read the stories and you can kind of talk with them and develop these kinds of things to be able to relate to what they're saying when you do mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. I was worried from the beginning that people would be like, this just sounds depressing. Yeah, but most of the responses have been pretty positive and be like, oh, yeah, I can see how this is some good material for some real, you know, human stories.
Mm-hmm. Now, your website is called A Wave Blue World, A-W-A-V-E-B-L-U-E World, like a sort of an ocean thing, a wave.
Yeah, blue world. It's Brave New World, but with the ocean theme.
Mm-hmm. So do you live by the ocean? Is that why you chose that?
No, I'm in Portland, Oregon now, which is on a river, but not on the ocean. But I always love the ocean, and it's important for me to get to the coast to recharge my batteries. And when I lived in San Diego, that was probably the only time I was on the ocean and did some surfing there and just loved to go out. I would love to just paddle out more than the actual surfing. Now, that was fun, but just to get out in the water, get a new perspective. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was sort of in my head when I came up with the name.
It's just kind of funny because, you know, you're not near the water, and yet you've used the water title for your website, which for some people makes it a little hard to find, it seems like.
Yeah, it's true. You know, there was also a lot of, when I was coming up with that name, there was a lot of companies that were really, like, short one word. And I understand why that makes sense from marketing-wise. And maybe I've kind of shot myself in the foot a little bit by making one that's hard to say. But I don't know. Like you said, I like to do things that are different. You know, go against the grain a little bit, even if that costs me some marketing or whatever along the way.
Well, I always like to talk to people who don't necessarily take the well-trodden path.
Yeah.
You know, everybody does the same things the same way, and I like it when somebody comes up with stuff that's way different. You know, coming up with a website that sounds like the ocean, and you're actually not near the ocean, which is a lot of fun. So I think that kind of is a sign that when you're reading your stories, you're not going to necessarily get the same old stuff.
You're right. That's what I hope for. Yeah.
So anything else that's coming on? I saw you, I think it was at HeroesCon.
Yeah.
About a year ago, I think it was. And are you going to do any more convention appearances this year?
You know, I just had to cancel my appearance at Yakima this weekend because the weather's so bad. Though, maybe tonight I'll recheck the weather and see. Maybe the storm's blown over. But that's it for this year. I didn't do New York Comic Con just because it wasn't worth the travel over there. But I'd like to do that next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be back at Heroes Con because that's a great show. Mm-hmm. Emerald City's my first one in March. Mm-hmm. So all I know for sure is Heroes Con, Emerald City, and New York Comic Con next year.
Emerald City, boy, good luck. That's great that you can get in there because my understanding is you have to struggle to get into Emerald City.
Oh, yeah? Well, we've been going for the last, I think I've been going for 8 years. I actually been going to that show before I moved to Portland. Like, I was going there from New York.
Oh, wow.
So I hope they don't boot me out. I mean, I've been doing it for 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Once you get your foot in the door, I think that they'll keep you, you know, because you prove reliable and they want to make money, of course. So
right.
You keep paying for the stuff and you get in there, man, they'll be happy to have you come back every year.
Right, yeah.
Just for what it's worth, I was at New York. And I came down with a nice cold from there, you know, they call it con crud.
Yep.
And that's why my voice is a little down low compared to what it normally is. But we came back, and on the way back, the roof of my mouth started to get sore. And I thought, oh, no, not that. So yep. I'm getting better, but it's a slow process. But I wanted to make sure to get this out there because I think it's important to support this Kickstarter and get things happening because it's important to support things that are not necessarily the same old stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, as I've been telling people, you know, I mean, yeah, I appreciate the support just because, you know, it's different in indie. But I mean, this is a great book. I mean, I know I'm a little biased, but just looking at what the artists have done on this, I know they're not big names, but they're really talented. They're really, you know, up and coming artists. And I'm, you know, I just know people are not going to be disappointed.
How did you find these artists, by the way?
Yeah, you know, just searching around, you know, I really wanted to find sort of like new artists that fit the story as well. There's some artists that went to the Kubert School, mm-hmm. you know, after me that I've been keeping my eye on. There's some ones that I know from the area out here in Portland, or just somebody that I saw, a comic maybe at a convention, was like, hey, you know, did you want to do a short story?
Mm-hmm.
And because I thought their style fit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are some people that, like, looked like they were going to do one that didn't, and then I got somebody else. Mm-hmm. But everybody I got, you know, did a great job and really fit the story well.
That's good because short stories are hard to come by in mm-hmm. comics these days. You know, now, like the X-Men, for decades, they've been going on with the same story. And so for me, I always like to get a shorter story because one thing you can do in the shorter story is you can come to a conclusion where most comics you have to reset Batman so he can go back and fight people the next time, and you can't change anything with him. So I always like it when short stories come along like yours, that we can enjoy the story and not have any idea where you're going.
Right.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's called Loved and Lost Anthology. Look on Kickstarter, find it. And there will be only about a week to go, roughly, when this airs. It'll be on Tuesday, October 25th, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. So be sure to get out there and support it. I love wonderful, different things, and this is one of those kinds of things. So please be sure to support it. And, you know, Tyler, keep up the great work. You're doing wonderful stuff. I always enjoy seeing something that's different, and that's the thing that you always provide. So I'm happy with that.
Great. Thank you. That's a perfect compliment.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Great to welcome back to the podcast Michael Jan Friedman, a prolific writer who's done many comics and also novels. And it looks like what you're going to do, Michael, is to put out a story that uses both mediums. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing real well, thanks. I'm very excited.
Yeah, so you've been doing a lot of things. Of course, you're known very well for Star Trek, and also, you know, your crossover type things. You did Star Trek X-Men, if I remember correctly, and other good things as well. So my understanding is you wanted to get back into comics as well as do a sci-fi novel.
Yeah. You know, it's been a while since I worked in comics on a regular basis, and I had so many other projects I wanted to launch, that comics and space adventure both kind of took a back seat to the other projects I was interested in. Which I launched through the independent publishing group Crazy 8 Press, which I was one of the founders of. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing a lot of things, and I'm going to continue to put out books through Crazy 8 Press, because there are so many things I want to do. But one of the things I miss is writing a space adventure comic book, as I did back in the 90s for DC Comics, when I wrote Star Trek The Next Generation, the monthly book. And I was at Mission New York, a Star Trek 50th anniversary celebration a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, I really miss writing Star Trek comics. And of course, that's not, you know, it's not in my control whether I do those, but it is in my control whether I want to do a space adventure comic book. Mm-hmm. And God knows, I think Gene Roddenberry would have been the first to concede that Star Trek was not the first space adventure. So there's certainly a lot of room for creative differentiation. Mm-hmm. And what I have in mind is something darker and grittier. But I didn't want it to just be dark and gritty. I wanted this book, Empty Space, to have something to say, and not necessarily something pessimistic. Mm-hmm. As dark and gritty as it is, I think it has some very positive things to say, because dark and downer are very popular and have been for a while. But I don't. That's not where I'm personally inclined to go. Mm-hmm. I like the dark. I like the gritty. But there has to be some hope, and there has to be something noble to shoot for.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you give us tell us the basic outline for what both the novel and the comic are about. What's the setup?
Right. Well, it is a comic at this point. The graphic novel that I have in mind is really just a collection of the comics.
Oh, okay.
The I can't tell you too much yet. I'll certainly be able to tell you more when I perhaps come back in a couple of months.
Okay.
But it's called Empty Space. Mm-hmm. It's about a universe in which mankind is far from the dominant force.
Mm-hmm.
There are two alien species, and one of the reasons that mankind survives is because these two alien species are at each other's throats, and we are not the main enemy.
Hmm.
So as long as that balance of power exists, we can survive in the gaps. Our hero is a guy named Robinson Dark. And talk about your dark stories. and Robinson Dark is somebody who's been pegged as somebody special. He is one of what are known in this adventure as empties. He's an empty.
Yeah.
Why he's an empty and what that means for us as a race and a species and what it means for him and his shipmates is something we'll get into later on. But for now, I can tell you that he is an empty, and he is discovering this milieu just as we are. We discover it along with him.
Mm-hmm.
The story is told in the first person. This is something that I've been doing more and more in prose,
mm-hmm.
and it's something I wanted to try in comics. Certainly not the first time it's ever been done.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Mark Waid did it very effectively in the Flash comics.
Mm-hmm.
So not my invention, but I think it's something that really works. It really brings the reader in more. You're not just watching the action. The analogy I like to use is the difference between riding a roller coaster and watching someone else ride the roller coaster.
Mm.
It can be exciting to watch somebody ride, but how much more exciting to be in the seat yourself?
Mm-hmm.
That's the feeling I want readers to get when they read Empty Space, because they're going to be in that perspective of Robinson Dark.
Okay. I was just going to ask that. Who's the first person? And you've answered that one, so that's a good thing. Will you give us a backstory on it? Is this, because you know, Howie Chaykin loves to drop us in the middle of a story and we don't know what's going on and we kind of figure it out as we go. Are you going to give us some backstory? Is history going to show up as it's relevant in the stories as you move forward?
You're going to be discovering things, mm-hmm. along with Robinson Dark. Mm-hmm. He's not going to know anything. Beginning on page one, he won't know anything. And as he makes discoveries, so will we. So it's called, you know, in media res is the technique, and that's the one I'll be using. You know, stories in general I think work well as voyages of discovery,
mm-hmm.
and the more personal discovery, the more the individual has at stake, the better. And Robinson Dark will have a lot at stake.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, as a writer, of course, you know how to write beginning, middle, and end. Do you have an idea as to how many? Are you going to do like mini-series of these? Are you going to do, you're talking about a graphic novel and stuff like that. Are you going to do like one story at a time in the graphic novel? Are you going to do some individual stories in between? How are you going to do that as you go forward?
Well, right now the plan is to do quartets.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do the first story arc will take four issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's the plan, and then be collected. And then the next story arc will take four issues and be collected. But we may get into longer arcs,
mm-hmm.
at some point. And who knows? Maybe I'll do a graphic novel that never becomes an e-comic,
mm-hmm.
Digital comic. So, you know, we'll see. But for now, the plan is to do four issues collected. And that's for practical reasons, for publishing reasons, as well as for creative reasons. I think, you know, the four-issue arc is generally a good one. Very often when you see six-issue arcs, they really don't need to be six issues.
Mm-hmm.
Six issues was kind of a magic number for comic book publishing. If you get six issues, well, then you can put it together, you can collect it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think four issues is good, and I think we'll try that out for a while.
Okay. So the question, of course, now is this is going to go through Crazy 8, right?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Because Crazy 8, it's really for, at least to this point, for book publishing.
Right.
And I have a company called Museworthy.
Okay.
Museworthy is kind of teamed up, you might say, with Crazy Eight on a couple of the anthologies I've done. But it makes more sense to go through Museworthy, to go through my company in terms of working with artists and paying artists and things like that. Mm-hmm. So the imprint will be Museworthy.
Okay. So that'd be good. Now, of course, you've got to approach Diamond, and you got to, if you're going to sell paper copies, that's a process you've got to go through and things like that. Are you going to do like a trade, put in Diamond, like the trades are in the individual issues and stuff? You're talking about Comixology and things. What about paper versions? Are you going to do that at conventions, maybe take the individual issues to like Star Trek conventions?
Yeah, I don't think at this point I'll go through Diamond.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I'm just one guy, so you know, I still have to sleep a few hours a night. So I think it'll be e-books through Comixology and collected editions through Kickstarter. And yes, I think I'll possibly print up limited editions, limited press runs for conventions and so on, but not definitely. The only definite things are the digital books and the collected editions. I have to see how things work out and see where the best opportunities are for me to connect with the reader. Yeah, that's where the magic is, right?
Right.
Between the creator, the creative team, and the readers.
Because when you're talking digital, you could always go through Amazon and go through iTunes. Even it sells digital versions of comics. So you could go all those different routes if you want to.
I'm certainly going to consider those. Mm-hmm. The margins are different when you do that.
Right.
But I certainly wouldn't, you know, I'd be foolish to rule that out. But right now, for now, I just want to keep it fairly simple. I can always go those routes in addition, but I want to keep it simple because it's more likely to work if I keep it simple at this point. And then if I see broader opportunities, then, you know, I can grow. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the great thing about Comixology that is particularly great is you are there and your book will have the same amount of shelf space as Action Comics.
That's right.
You know, when somebody goes and looks at Comixology, they'll go and look and they'll see all these different books, and yours will have the same amount of space as, say, Detective or any other book that you want to mention. And so you have the chance to compete that way. And I think, you know, there have been a lot of books that people come across that they may not have ever heard of, but it just looks interesting, and the description kind of draws them in, and so they start buying the digital versions of it. And you can subscribe and everything, too. So if somebody buys the first one, they like it, they can subscribe, and whenever the book comes out, it'll automatically get put to that person. So that sounds like a good way to go.
Yeah, in fact, the first time I ever heard of it, I said, you know, where's the catch? That's an amazing thing. You're exactly what you said. You're sharing shelf space with the big boys. Mm-hmm. So that was refreshing, and I feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. So how many issues are you going to put out in a year? Are you going to be bi-monthly? You know, will they come out when you're ready? Because, you know, if, as long as you tell fans that, people who are interested in the book and say, okay, it'll come out at such a point, then people are usually pretty forgiving about that and pretty, you know, understanding as far as those things go. Did you have a schedule in mind? Are you going to do bi-monthly? Because monthly is often kind of hard when it's just a small group working on it.
I'm shooting for bi-monthly. When December comes, you know, it's possible. When I see how quickly Kaio can work in producing the kind of stuff he's capable of, and my colorist as well, and my letterer, you know, when I see how quickly they can work and how quickly I can work, at that point I'll make the decision. But right now I'm leaning toward bi-monthly.
Okay. That's a good thing these days. That's what a lot of people do. And, you know, even the Image Comics model, you get so far, like, say, six issues in, and you take a break for a couple of months, and then you come back. That's what the Image does. And so there's all kinds of possibilities as far as doing comics go. As long as you're communicating with people, letting people know, okay, we're going to take a couple months off, then we'll be back, kind of stuff. If it just vanishes, then people just sort of say, oh, it's gone. And when it comes back, you lose people.
You know, a long time ago, I got involved with publishing magazines. You know, I was a writer for business magazines, and I did get involved in the publishing end of it after a while. And you learn some things, you know. And one is, you know, you don't thwart expectation. You know, as you say, you let people know what you're going to do, and then you do it, and you don't miss. also, you know, if you're quarterly, for instance, even as frequently as quarterly, you can be out of mind. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think bi-monthly is a good way to go. By the time we start, we'll have a little backlog. So we'll have some margin for error. And we'll put out those first four issues, and if we need to take a break, we'll communicate that. And but I don't want it to be a long lag. Mm-hmm. It's too easy to forget and move on to something else.
It's amazing to me that Image gets away with that, to be honest with you, because you know, it's so many times a book comes out and it's late, people automatically say, "We're done with that. We're not going to do that any longer." But you know, if Image started doing that, and ever since then, now it's just considered to be acceptable that, you know, if you want to take a couple months off, sure. No biggie.
Yeah. It goes against my grain.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. This may be an odd question considering you're just getting started, but one of the things I always enjoy about your writing is you know how to conclude things and wrap things up very well. And so since you're just getting this started, have you actually come up with the way you want this to end?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I've actually plotted out all four issues at this point. And then incidentally, because things came up and I said, gee, can I put that in? Do I have room? Does it make sense? You know, or should I save it for the next arc? Mm-hmm. I've actually got material into, you know, beyond issue four. Mm-hmm. But obviously I don't want it to end, but I do want to have a sense of closure.
Right.
So if you read the first four issues, you'll have a sense that, okay, this was a complete story.
Okay.
And we hope that you'll want to stick with us into a second arc, but it will be a complete arc and it'll be satisfying. And in fact, you know, listen, every issue, even every scene has to have some sense of closure or why include it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way to do things these days. The thing you have to do, though, is keep pulling people along, and you know, because comics have to end with a cliffhanger in order for you to come back. I've read some comics and they come to a very happy mm-hmm. ending all right. of a sudden, and at the end of the happy ending, people say, "Whoop, we don't have to buy it anymore." So
right.
you have to keep us on the edge of our seats by doing that. Right. But I was also curious too. But it's interesting; each arc going to do that. But what about like the whole series? You know, if let's say you start up and you get 20, 25 issues into it, do you have an end in mind for the whole series?
I do. And it's interesting you should ask that because that's the first advice I get. And in fact, I gave that advice today, mm-hmm. you know, to young writers, you know, they say, you know, what can you tell me? Give me some hints. And I say, you know, finish what you start. You don't know what the beginning is mm-hmm. until you write the end. Mm-hmm. You don't really know what that beginning was about. So, yes, I do. I know where it's going to end eventually. And I've had some practice, you know, mm-hmm. ending long arcs. My Dark Star series, which ran 39 issues for DC, actually had an ending. You know, when you get to the assistant editor who was working on it said, you know, after it was over, he read all 39 issues in a row and he said, "Wow, it really hung together. It ended." So I do have an ending in mind, but I'd like to forestall it as long as possible.
Okay, that's good. Yeah,
you know, it's important. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, when you read certain books, you can kind of sense that we're just sort of meandering. There's no feeling that we're getting anywhere. We're just sort of running in place a lot of times. But when a great story gets to the, you know, when we get to the end, you go, "Oh, now this all makes sense," because we've been aiming towards that direction. And even sometimes before you get to the end, you can feel that things are moving in a direction. You can just sense by the way it's being written that that's
yeah. I want to, what I wanted to do is constantly peel back layers of the onion. Mm-hmm. You thought it was this, but no, it's not exactly that. It's something else. Mm-hmm. And then you thought it was that, but you peel back another layer and you go, "Wow, that wasn't what we thought it was. It was something else." The objective is to be, you know, like The Usual Suspects. Mm-hmm. We got to the end. Mm-hmm. You really, you know, spoiler alert, you know, Spacey was Kaiser Sose. You know, when you get to the end, mm-hmm. it recolors everything that came before it. You go, I didn't realize what I thought was going on is not what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get some of that feeling into each arc of Empty Space.
Great, great. Now, of course, let's see. So it's going to be digital. You're going to have to do a lot of digital online promotion and things like that of this in order to make sure everybody knows when things are happening. Do you have any, like somebody who's going to be able to help you, like maintain, like say on Facebook and Twitter and all these other things, to be able to get the word out?
Yeah. Well, you know, largely because I've been doing Kickstarters, I have those mechanisms in mind.
Oh, good.
And I do have I do have a following when it comes to Star Trek. I do have a following when it comes to comic books, and I'm hoping that the combination of those two will be enough to make the book a success. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, podcasts mm-hmm. like this one mm-hmm. are a big help as well. So mm-hmm. so I've gotten to be reasonably good at getting the word out. And I have a lot of friends that I've made through my work, mm-hmm. and some of them are extremely helpful. So that helps.
Yeah, that'd be good because you probably also, once you get into a rhythm of it, know exactly what you're going to do when, as far as the issues go. You know, moving from writing to the art coming along, and then the getting it ready for Comixology and things like that. And then once that gets up there, of course, you got to do some promotion. So you'll probably have a while, you'll know the whole thing is how you're going to do this, or how you prefer to do it.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be an ongoing task, you know, to promote it. But one thing I don't want to do is just make it promotion. I find that promotion is best when it's value added. When you're saying, you know, here's something, here's some insight, here's some entertainment, here's something that you can enjoy and get off on, and and by the way, it's also promotion, mm-hmm. you know, so I want to, you know, everything that you give your prospective readers, even as small as a tweet, mm-hmm. should have some value to it. It should be something other people can't do.
Right.
You know, something clever, something entertaining, something witty. Here's some artwork. Here's some insight into where we're headed. Mm-hmm. You know, readers, even if they're just reading a tweet, it's still a commitment, and they don't have to do it. So you want them to get something out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I put myself in their place, and I say, you know, why should I read this? Why should I look at it? Is there something in there for me?
Mm-hmm. You bring to mind something else, too, is that some folks now, when they are, before they're releasing a comic, they'll release like a page or a section out as a webcomic. Has that appealed to you, mm-hmm. or would you just prefer to do it all in Comixology?
You know, at this point, I would, which is not to say I wouldn't release a page, mm-hmm. You know, to whet people's appetites. I think I might do that. And you know, there's nothing wrong with you know, giving away, this first page or a cover or mm-hmm. something, you know, that makes people feel involved. Stan Lee was a master at getting people, you know, to feel like you know, they're included, mm-hmm. part of what we're about, and bringing them into the process, and much more than any other comic had ever done. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to do that. I want people to feel like they're part of it. I really treasure the relationship between the creator and the reader. And, you know, when I discuss it, you know, in books, I see the writer and the reader. It's very important, and it's important in this time of traditional publishing having to reinvent itself, and in some cases to just give up, as happened with Borders. Mm-hmm. It's very important to preserve that relationship between the creative talent and the reader. The reader, you know, the reader is a talent as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not everybody who can even look at a comic book and see the images and put themselves effectively in that story. Mm-hmm. You know, have the imagination to put themselves into that story. That's a talent too. Mm-hmm.
Very much. And of course, working together, that's when things are the most excellent, is when you tell a story and people get it.
Right, right.
That's a great thing.
There's nothing better than that. There's nothing mm-hmm. better than having them, you know, really get it. I mean, I remember one time I was writing a book called Kales, a Star Trek book about Kales, the first emperor, really, on the Klingon homeworld, and talking about the historical Kaelas. And at one point I realized, I said, wait a second, there's an opportunity here to put a little twist into this, mm-hmm. which I hadn't contemplated in the original outline. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it that way. And I put the twist in. I said, wow, that could be cool. But, you know, will they get it? Will they get it? I have to be subtle about it. Mm-hmm. Will they get it? And then sure enough, a couple of weeks after it came out, a woman came up to me after a panel at a convention, and she said, I love the way you twisted that. I didn't see that coming. And I told her, yeah, I didn't see it coming either.
Sometimes the characters take on their own lives in your imagination, and that's always a good thing, because it'll probably feel more natural when those things, as they develop, rather than trying to force it down a path you already predetermined.
Right, right. I mean, you have to, you know, I'm not what they call a pantser. Mm-hmm. I am a planner. I like to know where something's going. You know, I like to know what the stopover points are, where we kick into a higher gear. But you do have to leave a little room for the unexpected. Douglas Adams, who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide, mm-hmm. said a writer's only job is to surprise himself. So you need a little room for that.
Mm-hmm. We're good. So that's good. While I've got you, I want to ask you just a couple of questions, because you're a Star Trek guy, and I know this is your opinion. Don't have to worry. Well, the first thing I want to know is, because as a Star Trek guy, do you keep up with Star Trek, or is it better for you as somebody who's created in that universe to kind of stay away from that?
Well, I stay with it with regard to the screen products. Mm-hmm. I seldom read the books or the comics, to be honest, because reading a book or a comic while you're writing something, mm-hmm. whether it's that or something else, is a little like listening to music while you're writing music. it's just hard to do. Mm-hmm. And as much as I love and respect, you know, my fellow Star Trek writers, I just can't do it. And that's the irony, you know, that's the sad irony of being a writer, is that you got into it because you admired the writing of others, because you love to read. And unfortunately, you don't do nearly as much of it when you're a writer.
Because I was thinking, because I know you're a Star Trek guy and you're also a Green Lantern guy.
Oh, yeah.
They had the crossover between the two, which I really enjoyed, and ended rather differently than what I expected. And I just wondered if you had a chance to look at it, because they're going to do a second one now, And I just thought to me, that was just an ideal crossover, both sci-fi properties. You know, it really worked out really well, I thought. I enjoyed the book real, real well. And I'm just hoping the second series is as good as the first. But
I'll agree. It's a natural. Mm-hmm. It's a natural crossover. And I will read that. Mm-hmm. I just haven't done it yet. Mm-hmm. It's hard to keep up with, you know, all the TV series, comic book characters. You know, it's weird because, you know, we used to be nerds. Okay. And had our own little things. And, you know, there was a time when you couldn't even get a superhero action figure. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to kind of take other figures and imagine, what if this was the Silver Surfer, or what if this, you know, a Captain America or Thor, or Green Lantern, or the Martian Manhunter. So you really had to use your imagination, and you felt alone, and sometimes, if not alone, at least part of a very select, isolated group. And now everybody knows about it. You know, who doesn't know about the Avengers and the X-Men and Spider-Man? So it's kind of weird that you have all these possibilities. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the Supergirl series, mm-hmm. and the Flash and Green Arrow and S.H.I.E.L.D., but I can't watch them all. Likewise with the comics, and the Green Lantern Star Trek crossover, which looks really good, is something I'll have to binge at some point.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, that's the thing you don't do as a writer, is be influenced by something, and then all of a sudden somebody says, well, you know, that was just like in the show, and then you realize, whoops, I watched that show a month ago. So yeah, don't want to do that. You don't want to do those kinds of things.
Sometimes I influence myself, and I don't even know it until I go back to something I did a long time ago, and I went, I did that before. I already did that. Mm-hmm. I didn't even remember. But, you don't want to be influenced, but you do want to be entertained sometimes, so you have to occasionally put down your keyboard and, you know, and read somebody else's wonderful work.
Mm-hmm. I've got to ask you, of course, this new Star Trek series coming. And you have written, co-wrote an episode for Voyager, as we discussed. What's your opinion about what's coming, what you've heard so far? And, you know, granted, you know, this is something that you might hopefully at some point get a chance to contribute to. You never know. So, well, what's your feeling about
it? It's true. I better kiss ass, right? But honestly, I'm very excited about it. I'm just curious. I want to know what they're going to do. I'm sure it's going to be Star Trek, so there'll be something familiar about it, but it'll also be something different. And I resent things like having to subscribe in order to enjoy something that maybe I should enjoy for free. But in this case, it's fine. I'm looking forward to it that much that if I have to shell out a few shekels, it's okay.
You know, I have to tell you a story, because when Stargate SG-1 first came out, it was on Showtime. And I didn't have Showtime. And so I had a friend of mine who had taped them all, and he gave me the tape. And it was a Christmas Eve. We watched the first 2 hours, and then we watched the other 5 hours he had on Christmas Day. And I literally was calling him saying, "You got any more of that stuff? Where is it?" And I always get a kick, because at the time it was on Showtime, we used to have discussion panels, and I'd always ask, how many people buy Showtime just to get this show? And a lot of us did. It was just an amazing thing, because it was such a great show that we were willing to pay to get it. But of course, it was a great show, and that has a lot to do with it. They have a lot to live up to, though, because we're paying for it.
They do. But, you know, I think they have they also have a lot to refer to in terms of successes and maybe some not so much successes, and I think the people that who are working on it, who've been announced so far, are all very good people. You know, Brian Fuller's terrific, and I think if the quality of the talent and the respect for the material is anything like what I think it is, then it's just going to be a good series.
So if they came knocking at your door, you would consider it?
I wouldn't turn it down.
Okay. Now, one other question, too, we're talking about television. What if somewhere down the pike a TV producer gets a hold of your comics and approaches you and says, "Hey, we'd like to make this into a TV show"? What's your reaction to that kind of stuff?
You mean when they peel me off the ceiling? I'll be very happy that, I would make that sacrifice.
Okay.
if I had to, I would make that sacrifice. And, honestly, I'm aiming to make this as good as any TV show. That's one reason I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. I want to do it in a measured way and make sure that everything that goes out the door is of a very high quality. And if they wanted to make it into a TV show, I think it would be a terrific TV show. With the right director, and I think it could be terrific. In fact, I try to, when I write comics, I try to be cinematic. I try to write them as TV episodes. That's something I did all the time with Star Trek: The Next Generation, and fans got that. It came across, and that was very gratifying. They said, "Yeah, it's just like an episode we've never seen before." So that was very it was good to hear, and it was good that they got what I was trying to get across.
Have you ever watched Dark Matter on Sci-Fi?
No, but I want to. That's another thing I want to work.
I'll point out a little something I've been doing to that, because it might have a bearing on what you're talking about. Dark Matter is written, we talked about Stargate a couple minutes ago. Some of the creators or producers on Stargate got together and did a comic book called Dark Matter, and it came out from Dark Horse, appropriately enough. And that book came out, and I really loved it. And then when I was shocked to find out that Sci-Fi had actually picked it up, and if you read like the first comic, it's like the first episode of the series. And I was shocked. I said, "Holy smoke." I said, "This is the comic book that I bought." And, of course, now it's in the second or third season. It's going along, and it's doing real well. And, it makes what you're doing makes me think along those lines. You might want to buddy up to somebody at Sci-Fi.
Yeah, it's luck of the draw. I mean, I've approached Sci-Fi with – in fact, I'll tell you, the Medieval Times is, the restaurant chain. A friend and I, he had a business relationship with Medieval Times, and he wanted to create a TV series based on the medieval times. So I said, great, and I came up with a pilot, and we tried to sell it to Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi didn't buy it, but Bravo did.
Hmm.
And it was going to be their first dramatic series.
Hmm.
And it was an ensemble series, because in the medieval times restaurants, they have, six nights.
Mm-hmm.
And so about six nights. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a swords and sorcery thing. And Bravo was very excited about it. And then Medieval Times, which was in on it from the beginning, eventually lawyers put the kibosh on it.
Oh, nuts.
And, you know, yeah, mm-hmm. But, you know, this is the way things go. So sometimes you get to the threshold and you just don't go anywhere from there. And then other times it works.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of, you can't expect it. You can't even hope for it. You put it out there and you see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a great concept. So I'm really looking forward to it. Say the name of the book again.
It's called Empty Space.
Okay. And it's coming out in December on Comixology is what we're aiming for.
That's our goal, is to come out in December on Comixology and take it bi-monthly from that point.
Okay. Now, are there other things that you're working on that we should be aware of, Michael?
Well, yeah, a few things. One is I'm just finishing the editing of Pangea, which is an anthology I did with 12 other science fiction writers. This is the second volume. The idea is that mankind has grown up on a single supercontinent and has never known anything else. Never grown up on disparate continents. So, for instance, the Neanderthals survive as a separate and distinct race. There's no transcontinental voyages because there's nowhere to go other than this one continent. There's no colonialism, and it's a different world. And yet there are some similarities. So you have a very different world, and the stories are all spawned by that difference. We have some great writers. I don't want to start mentioning them because then I'll feel bad that I didn't mention the others. But if you've looked at our list of writers, we have Nebula and Hugo nominees. We have TV writers. We have just a terrific roster. And the first volume did well, and we're hoping that the second volume does just as well. We kickstarted them both. So we've already covered our expenses, and eventually there'll be a third volume. I'm also working on an anthology of my own stories, long and short form, some novellas, some short stories. Short stories, writing shorter fiction is a muscle I haven't exercised a lot, but I got the urge to do so, in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
So little by little, I've accumulated an interesting collection of stories, science fiction, fantasy, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost done with that. So I'll be kickstarting that next year,
wow,
probably early. And there are some other franchises I want to extend. There's one called Aztlan,
mm-hmm,
which is about a 21st century Aztec Empire series of murder mysteries. And the hero is an investigator for the emperor.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Mashtlaklua. So I want to do some more of that. That's been very well received.
Mm.
And I did a book called I Am the Salamander, which,
yes,
I'd like to do a sequel to. It's essentially a superhero novel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to, I've already started a sequel to that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot going on. And as I said, I want to get back into working on Star Trek properties as well.
Okay.
So that'll be something, an interesting challenge.
Well, if you don't get to write the scripts, you can always pick up the novels based on the new show, because they're always looking for people to write the novels to go along with it, because Star Trek sells action figures and novels and costumes and you name it. So they're always looking for some new material to put out. So you'll have to put a pitch in for a novel when you start seeing the show.
I believe I'm going to do that.
Well, Michael, you're always doing great stuff. It's great to talk with you again, and much success with this, and I'll keep track of it. And when you get enough that you can send me a PDF or something so I can write a review about it, I'd like to get the first issue so I can talk about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I hope to come back, when we're a little further down the line and we have more to talk about, I'd like to do so.
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me. It's always fun, to talk to somebody who knows exactly what he's talking about and a kindred spirit. So I appreciate that.
Well, same here.
ConCrud's not the only thing I came away from New York Comic Con with. Coming soon, you'll hear my interviews with great DC creators. And in 2 weeks, my Halloween broadcast with two special holiday interviews. But until then, keep reading your comics.